it's lovely to see everybody again, and I know that you're going to enjoy this talk from Heritage Trails Chairperson Megan Williams. We're very, very glad to have Megan here. And as you will have noticed, the 200 block in town is the hit-in block at the moment. And it happens to be on the east side, and it's the east side of Hastings that the Heritage Trails are focusing on tonight, because there'll be a brochure coming out soon. A lot of you will have followed the wonderful history of the Heritage Trails. There's something like 17 brochures on that table at the back. And that amounts to an awful lot of work, a lot of research, a lot of foot tramping up and down, and photos, and goodness knows what. So we really congratulate those of you who are here. I should tell you that the Heritage Trails has been going since 1990, so there's a lot of history. It sits well with us. Over to you, Megan.
Well, good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome Philip. Philip is one of our Heritage Trails Committee members. And Norman here, he put his hand up as being part of the deal, but he's on actually the front cover of all the brochures that you're sitting on. We went for a bike ride one day and I sort of snapped a photograph. Now, heritage trails are developed by identifying points of scenic, historic and cultural significance. A route is developed joining these points of interest together with the signage and an information brochure. The trails can be enjoyed by both locals and visitors. A number of years ago, the Hastings Heritage Trails Committee developed an urban trail around Hastings. As with all our trails, we need to revamp them from time to time as the brochures become out of date, as things change. The trail I'm going to talk about tonight is one quarter of the larger trail, which we have decided to make into four trails: the east and the west of the Central Business District, and the east and west of the Outer Hastings Trail, which will include most of the Hastings City. Our CBD trails are now in draft form, and once we have published the brochure, will be launched for everyone to enjoy. We're having brass plaques placed into the pavement at certain points around this urban trail. Now, the Central Hastings Heritage Trail on the East Walk, first of all, I'd like to talk about the introduction. In 1864, Thomas Tanner arranged the lease of approximately 17,000 acres of the Heritonga Plains from Māori. Sometime later, a syndicate was formed to purchase this area, and the Heritonga block was surveyed into 12 sections. This was the start of the legend of the 12 apostles, although, as Tanner later pointed out at an inquiry, there were 12 shares but never 12 men. The 12 shares were divided amongst T. Tanner, B. Braithwaite, J. Williams, J. Gordon, J. Ormond, Purvis Russell, W. and A. Russell. The purchase price was stated to have been about 30 shillings an acre. In 1873, Francis Hicks, having acquired a portion, presented the government with a section of land for the site of a railway station, and decided to lay out 100 acres near the site for a township to be called Hastings. A total of 144 sections were offered, the average price per acre being £56. At that stage, much of the area was still swamp, and the original settlers of the Heritonga Plains decided that Havelock North was to be the future town. It was only with the rerouting of the railway in 1874 that Hastings was chosen as the town site. Years later, the swamps were drained, population increased, and places of business prospered. Fruit growing became an important industry, vineyards were established, and by 1884 the town had a population of 614. Hastings was incorporated as a borough on the 20th of October 1886, and was the largest borough in New Zealand until April 1908, when a large portion was included in the Hawke's Bay County. Hastings was proclaimed a city on the 8th of September 1956 and a district in 1989, following the amalgamation of the councils of Hastings City, Havelock North Borough and the Hawke's Bay County. Like other Hawke's Bay towns, Hastings was named after the British who were involved in the ruling of India. In this case, Warren Hastings, India's first Governor General. This central area of Hastings has fine examples of the Spanish mission style of buildings from the 1910s to the 1930s, features include terracotta tile roof, parapet, window hoods, barley twist columns, and decorative ironwork. The other style periods seen in the area are the colonial, the 1870 to 1900, with timber construction and timber or cast iron veranda posts. Edwardian commercial from 1900 to 1920, often with two or more stories and no veranda, and having ornate decoration. The striped classical, which was the 1920 to 40s, with strong vertical emphasis with columns, often with windows placed between the columns and classical decoration. And Art Deco, which was the 1920s to 40s, featuring stylized plant or geometrical decoration and consistent skyline. Now, we start our walk. The first site, the Hastings Clock Tower, is the starting point for the Central Hastings Heritage Trail Walk East and the Central Hastings Walk East. Both of the trails start there. In 1931, Hawke's Bay earthquake destroyed the clock tower, which had graced the corner of the Hastings Post Office since 1909. In 1934, the Borough Council invited designs for a clock tower, and the architect S.G. Chaplin, called Sid Chaplin, won the 25 guinea prize. The tower was erected under the supervision of Chaplin on land permanently leased from the Railway Department. W. Little Johns & Co. of Wellington supplied a gents electric turret striking and chiming clock. The chimes given earlier by the borough solicitor E. H. Williams and salvaged from the debris of the post office tower were installed in the new structure that was erected in 1935. At the foot of the clock tower, a time capsule was buried in 2002. Across the road, across the railway line from the clock tower, and when you're crossing on the right hand, the south corner of Russell Street and Heratonga Street, you will see the Westerman Company. Now, this is a picture of when it was being built. Established in 1910, Westerman's was one of the oldest department stores. The present building is on the same site as the 1921 store, which was destroyed in the 31 earthquake. Fortunately, some of the interior fittings and the magnificent wooden staircase designed by Albert Garnett were salvaged and used in the new building. Designed by Edmund Edgecombe in Spanish Mission style, rich with classical detailing and the use of bronze, beveling glass, terrazzo and pressed metal ceilings under the veranda, this building is one of the most superb examples of shop front design in New Zealand. A special feature is the elaborate enclosed glass display window at this corner entrance. Within the original store, customers could perch on high stools at the counter and watch their payments travel to the cashier through pneumatic tubing around the store's walls, as it is today. Begin walking along Heratonga Street, keeping to the footpath on the side of the road. While walking down Heratonga Street, observe the Art Deco details of the building facades above the verandas of the commercial buildings across the street. Most of the original buildings in the block were destroyed in the 31 Hawke's Bay earthquake. Unlike central Napier, very few buildings in central Hastings caught fire following the earthquake. One exception was the Grand Hotel. The current two-storied hotel is much smaller than the original brick five-storey Grand Hotel that collapsed during the 1931 earthquake with the loss of several lives. The present ferro concrete building was designed by Wellington architect W. Johns and was completed in 1934. You can see it there when it fell down in the earthquake. Next to the Grand Hotel is the State Theatre, now Focal Point Cinema. The two-storied State Theatre was built in 1934 and was an Edmund Edgecombe-inspired design. It took over four ground floor shops to create the foyer, with the cinema at the back of the building in 1994. It was reconfigured to become a multiplex cinema, and the imposing Art Deco style facade was added to the front. Continue along Heratonga Street, crossing Karamu Road at the traffic lights, and you'll reach Albert Square. This park was originally the site of the Albert Hotel, a colonial-style timber building that operated until approximately 2010 as a working man's pub and accommodation. On the brick wall at the side of the park, you will see one of Hastings Icons images depicting a notable person of Hastings. Look out for these on other buildings during our walk. Directly opposite the Albert Square is Holden's building. Originally the site of Sutherland's Drapery, the business in the timber building here was taken over by Francis Nutter in 1930. The building, except for a brick extension at the rear, which collapsed, was able to still operate soon after the 1931 earthquake. It was eventually replaced by the current structure built by Mr. Holden in 1934, but kept the name Nutter's on the corner facade. Next to this is a distinctive multiple site facade of One Marsh. Mr. Richard Jones is present with us today. Mr. Matthew Johnson established the forerunner of Bon Marsh in 1895. In those days, it was called Johnson's, but in the 1920s, it was renamed Bon Marsh. In 1929, when Mr. Johnson died, the shop was managed by his son-in-law, Mr. James Jones, father of the Jones boys, Stuart, Ross, Richard, and Bryce, who all worked in Bon Marsh for over 30 years, and in Stuart's case, 40 years. The boys took over the firm in 1960 when Mr. Jones Sr. died. The drapery business was famous for its sales and service. The business was originally located at 113-115 Heratonga Street East and moved into the present building sometime between 1935 and 1940. The building was then owned by the children of the late Edward Warren. Given the same owners, the direct physical similarity with the adjacent Russell's building, in the same builder, it seems extremely likely the building was designed by Edmund Antrim and Associates. In 1974, the building was transferred to Bon Marsh. The store closed in 1994 due to the completion of the large retail franchise big box businesses. The aesthetic value of Bon Marsh building rests in its townscape qualities. Although it is a quiet building in a group of similarly quiet buildings, its long, low proportions, Art Deco features, and plain plastered surfaces give it a distinctive visual quality. The group marks a strong contribution to the predominant Art Deco theme of the architecture of the Central Business District. The exterior features Art Deco motifs symbolising the machine age. Originally, the door architrave had striped classic details and decorative veranda fascia. There were terrazzo shop fronts with metal framed windows. If you look across the road, where you are walking, looking across at Bon Marsh, but now you're looking at 205 Heratonga Street East, the Little Red Bookshop. This building operated as a music store. It survived the 1931 Hawke's Bay earthquake with only some cracking in the walls. And the store was the first seller of radios in Hawke's Bay. The owner at the time was Jim Sutcliffe, and his employee Paul Bartram ran Hawke's Bay's first radio station, 2Z1. The remainder of the buildings on the side of the road collapsed during the earthquake and were rebuilt in the distinctive Arts Deco style. Simmons Seed and Grain Merchants, 211 Heratonga Street East. This building is also known as the Simmons Building, named for A. Simmons Limited, seed, grain and produce merchants, who occupied the building from the early 1900s until the 1980s. The business was established in 1899 by Arthur Simmons after he purchased Cranby and Sides, a seed, grain and produce business based in Napier. He subsequently owned an additional store in Hastings. The business was taken over by Mr. John Common, Mr. L. Bisson and Mr. K. Merritt, sometime before the 1931 earthquake. Simmons Building was completely destroyed as a result of the earthquake, and temporary premises were erected at the rear of the store, facing into Eastbourne Street. The new building, erected in 1932, features some subtle branding near the top of the parapet and a distinct band of rolling waves not seen elsewhere, just above the veranda. See the waves? Now, today, see that passageway there, you can go down there, right at the back, you can still see the original brick walls of the Simmons building where they used to store the seeds. Carry on down the side of the street and you'll see the site of F.L. Bones, which is 215 Heratonga Street East. The hardware business of F.L. Bones operated on this site from the early 1900s, and the property extended from Heratonga Street through to Eastbourne Street, selling hardware, plumbing, supplies, wood, coal and timber. When the original building collapsed during the 1931 earthquake due to the brick walls giving way, there was no serious injuries, The current building, with its lead-like windows, tiles and pressed metal veranda panels, was opened in 1932. And this company still operates from the rear of the building, which is on Eastbourne Street. The original Dominion restaurant building collapsed in the 31 earthquake, and this replaced Edmund Anscombe design building with its distinctive asymmetrical curved and green tiled front was built in 1935. Now that particular picture has got the curved glass. I didn't put a more modern one. The street frontage of the building is still original and is Hastings' only example of an Art Deco storefront. The original window was curved glass, but when it was broken, it was replaced by a series of panels of glass. At the intersection of Heratonga Street with Warren Street, cross Heratonga Street to the opposite side and take a moment to look back along Heratonga Street towards the railway to observe the facades of these buildings that you've passed. Note also the details in the underside of the verandas of the shop behind you. An additional detour can be made down Warren Street to your left to view Landmark Square. So I thought we'd give a little Landmark plug here. Landmark Square is a pocket park in the central city named for Landmarks, a council and community initiative focused on the enhancement of the Hastings environment. The park includes a plant feature wall, an industrial steel shade pergola, grass spaces, seating and a water fountain. The Landmarks initiative was started in the late 1990s by then Mayor, the late Jeremy Dwyer. A wall plaque in the park tells the story of his vision to build community pride in the wake of difficult economic times. Return to Heratonga Street and turn left, keeping to the north footpath across the road is the Hawke's Bay Electric Power Board building. This late Art Deco period building, designed by Harold Davies and Eric Phillips, was completed in 1938. It used to be the head office of the Hawke's Bay Electric Power Board. You will note on the right of this picture, which is no longer there, a modernised building, some of you may recall that the positioning of the windows when it was built caused great stress to motorists as they travelled along Warren Street in a certain time of day as the sun hit the glass-angled windows and would blind the driver. Next to this, and extending to the corner of Heratonga and Hastings Street, is the municipal building. And that photo there is after the earthquake. This building once housed the municipal chambers, Hastings Library and Assembly Hall, above the shops, and now provides various function rooms. It was designed by Albert Garnett. The ballroom with its beautiful sprung floor is the largest in Hawke's Bay. In 1931 earthquake, it survived but needed some extensive repairs. More recently, the complex was completely restored and underwent earthquake strengthening. It was reopened in 1922. Partway down this block are granite paving stones on the footpath that have design elements laser etched into them, depicting the former true course of the Makarikiriwa River that once flowed across the area and is now pumped and piped beneath the city streets. Cross Heratonga Street at this point, watching out for traffic, and continue east along Heratonga Street to Hastings Street, and across the road, a short distance to the south in Hastings Street, is Wesley Methodist Church. This first church, built by Messrs. Furness and Clark, was opened for worship in April 1884. It was then enlarged in 1894 and 1906, and the 31 earthquake completely destroyed this beautiful building. A new church designed by the architects Harold Davies and Eric Phillips was built on the site in the Spanish Mission style, opened in 1932. An information board in front of the church gives information about the church, Toi Toi, across the road from the church. And of course this was previously the Hastings Municipal Theatre and Opera House. Designed by Henry L.A. White as the Hastings Municipal Theatre and built by Bull Brothers in 1915, the building survived the 1931 earthquake, although major reconstruction work was needed. The Art Nouveau influence is obvious in the extravagant design, as is early Spanish Mission influence. It has since undergone several periods of restoration and extensive improvements to the facilities. Following the earliest of these was the renaming the Hawke's Bay Opera House, and then after the most recent restoration and reopening in 2020, it was renamed Toi Toi. The name Toi Toi is a term used as a way to wish fellow performers good luck, and in Māori means pinnacle of achievement. Now on the corner of Hastings Street, is Guy Bailey Motors. Now, these premises were built in the 1930s and used to be a motor vehicle business owned by Guy Bailey. Through the generosity of Ross Dicer and McLean, he operated as a Pontiac agency in Hastings, as well as selling Vauxhall cars and Bedford trucks. This business was moved to Nelson Street. Some of you may recall Gilbert Lloyd, who managed it in later years. Mark Quinney had his garage on the corner subsequently until the early 1990s, when the Hastings Facilities Trust, consisting of John Knott, Peter Fenwick and Bruce Jans, suggested to council that they buy this building. The purpose was to give the Opera House, or Municipal Theatre, better access to behind the stage. And by having better access, it meant larger shows could be attracted to the Hastings Theatre. Turn right into Eastbourne Street and you'll see the Municipal Powerhouse. This was built in 1912 to house two direct current DC 150-volt diesel generators. These operated into the early 1920s when it became possible to purchase power from the national grid. Hastings had been one of the first civic bodies in New Zealand to have a public electricity supply. Continue along Eastbourne Street, crossing Warren Street, and proceed to the traffic lights at the intersection with Karamu Road. Cross Eastbourne Street and you get the Hastings District War Memorial Library, which we're in. Originally designed by architects Davies, Phillips and Chaplin, this building was erected in 1959 to commemorate those who gave their lives for their country in World War II and subsequent conflicts. Of particular note are the outside plaques, the mural and the windows in the Hall of Memories, designed and painted by war artist Peter McIntyre. Two new wings and a mezzanine floor, designed in Spanish Mission style by David Ironside of Works Consultancy, were added. These were opened on 17th of July 1993 by Jeremy Dwyer, the then mayor. Look back across the road opposite the library to observe Ross Dicer and McLean Limited building. This well-known Hastings motor body building business built these showrooms and workshop premises in 1935-36. Following the collapse of their previous building in the 31 earthquake. As well as being agencies for imported cars, they became motor mechanics. Andy Dysart helped to organise the Hawke's Bay Automobile Association in 1947 to 48, at that time only the 12th to be established worldwide. Staying on the same side of the road as the library, observe on the grass, under the trees, Ngāti Ohiretonga. 18 po representing ancestors of the marae around the Hiratonga district. These po were all hand-carved from the ancient totara trees. There is information about this po on the information boards. Continue along Eastbourne Street towards the railway line. On your left is the Woman's Rest. This building was designed by Mr. S.B. Dodge of the Hastings Borough Council. The women's restrooms were built in the time of Mayor Ebbett, 1990 to 1921. The restrooms were the first in Australasia and provided a welcome building for country women travelling to town with their family to rest, toilet and freshen up before shopping. Rooms were made available by the council for Plunkett, and the facilities were also used by ladies working in town as an area where they could eat their lunch. Controversy arose when women complained that they had to spend a penny for a visit, while men could use other local toilets for free. So the fee was then removed. Turn left into Russell Street and proceed to Major General Sir Andrew Russell statue, one of Hawke's Bay's most decorated soldiers. Now there is an information board there about him. It's self-explanatory. And then the next one is Dolly the Warhorse statue. Again, there's an information board. A sculpture is to be erected to commemorate all the animals who acted in service in World War I. Dolly was one of the four horses to return from the war. The sculpture is still to be erected. See the information board. The next one is the cenotaph, initially erected to commemorate local men who gave their lives for their country in the 1914-18 war. Commemorative services are held here each year on Anzac Day, 25th of April. Return to the corner of Eastbourne Street, opposite you, the corner of Russell Street, is the Colonial Mutual Building. Built in the 1929 Spanish Mission style, note the terracotta tiles on the turret roof and the detailing on the facade. cross Eastbourne Street at the pedestrian crossing and then cross Russell Street on the footpath to the eastern side of the railway line, walk back towards Heratonga Street while looking at the facades of the buildings that line Russell Street. Note the strong Spanish Mission and Art Deco elements in these buildings' facades. Christie's. Archibald Christie arrived in Hastings in 1914. He had a crockery retail business in Gore, but that was washed out in the 1912 by a Matua flood. It is not clear where Christie established his first store, but he did move to a timber building in Russell Street. The site of the present building that bears his name, most likely in 1930. That year, Christie bought a row of three lots in Russell Street, although it is possible he leased the property earlier. His first building on the site must have been damaged in the 1931 Hawke's Bay earthquake because it was replaced by a temporary structure before the present building that was erected in 1934. The new building was designed by architect Albert Garnett and built by A. Hampton. Albert Garnett already designed other Spanish Mission buildings before the earthquake, such as the Copper Girls building, and this design complemented other adjacent Russell Street buildings just completed, like Westerman's. The building remained in the ownership of Christie family until 1990 when it was sold to Central Medical New Zealand Limited for use as a medical centre. It retains the function to this day under the name of the Doctors Hastings. Since the medical centre was established, six building consents have been issued and considerable changes have taken place, particularly internally. Next is the Harvest Building. Completed in 1933, the exterior of this building is in Spanish Mission style, while its interior, with its mezzanine floor, has elements of Art Deco and strict classical styles, ideal for displaying hardware and imported china. It now is home to Arts Inc., a community gallery, so it is possible to enter the building and appreciate the interior and this beautiful skylight. Walking along Russell Street will give you another opportunity to appreciate the details on the facade of the Westerman's building. If you walk along there and look up, you'll see all the beautiful pressed iron. Continue past the fountain that surrounds the railway line on the intersection of Heratonga Street and Russell Street, and on the northeastern corner of this intersection is Rob Johns and Rogers Building. Built in Art Deco style in 1932 from a Harold Davies design, the veranda of this building also features the pressed metal soffits as seen on the Westerman's opposite. And then the Popper Wells Building. Built in 1924, this was first known as Fitzgerald's Building. Like other buildings designed by Albert Garnett in this period, it is built from reinforced concrete in a Spanish Mission style, but with some strict classical details. Next to this, and extending to the intersection of Russell Street North and Queen Street East, is the old post office. And that's the picture of the post office after the earthquake. You can see the bell. Originally designed in 1909 by the government architect John Campbell in the Edwardian Baroque style, it was one of the most imposing buildings in Hastings. Its impressive clock tower was destroyed with loss of life in the 1931 Hawke's Bay earthquake. Rebuilt in 1932 to the design of another government architect, J. Moore, it, like the nearby public trust building, was designed in a severe, strict classical style. When in the 1990s large post offices were closed in favour of smaller post shops, this building sat empty and neglected for a number of years. From 2001 to 2019, it housed the Hastings Health Centre. The integrity of the interior was retained and colour scheme advice was sought from New Zealand Historic Places Trust. Today, the building houses Westpac Bank. Cross Russell Street North and proceed along Hastings Street East, and the buildings along both sides of Queen Street in this block are built in the Edwardian commercial style, mostly dating from the 20th century. Many of these buildings suffered only minor damage in the 1931 earthquake. Locals often referred to this area as Shark Alley, as many lawyers and accountants had premises there. On the left-hand side, north of the road, is the Painter and Washy Printers Building, which is now Lipscomb Legal. This building was partly owned by Ron Washy, the brother of Sir James Washy, and was supposedly a temporary building erected to house their printing company following the earthquake. It still bears the W for Watties in the front of the building. Next to it is the Dominion Building. Built in 1908 for Lady Andrew Russell, This was the first ferro concrete building constructed in Hastings and is a good example of the Edwardian Baroque style, a building style popular in the years before the First World War. It is one of the few commercial buildings in this style to have survived the earthquake. On the corner of Queen Street and Carrow Road, if you go past there, the detail is just beautiful. These Karamu chambers, this building, built in 1934, is an excellent example of striped classical style of architecture. The National Bank building previously on the site survived the 1931 earthquake, but a fire that night gutted the interior, and then 2 days later, the basement containing cash and valuables was flooded. The building was subsequently demolished. Diagonally across the road is the Public Trust building. Built in 1926 and designed by William architect Stanley Fearn, this building is very dignified with its entry marked by double height Ionic columns. It is engineer designed and survived the earthquake with no recorded damage, although I do notice that they have reinforced it. If you go past, you'll see where it's got the big iron beams and so on. It's interesting that it was designed by an engineer and didn't have much damage on the earthquake. This photo is the building of the Herald Tribune building. The Herald Tribune building is a rare example of Edwardian architecture being built of brick masonry. It was damaged in the earthquake and the repairs were made in 1931 by C. Tillard Nartouche. Later, the glazed addition of the first floor altered the building appearance dramatically. This building is strongly associated with the development of the newspaper industry in Hastings. The facade of this building was retained when the building was extensively renovated in early 2020. So that today it is a distinct mix of Edwardian and modern styles. Now turn right into Carrow Road and you'll have to see the Jubilee building. The Jubilee building is a good example of the strict classical style, again with classical motifs arranged in an unusual, indeed idiosyncratic manner. These give the building a strong visual interest. It is otherwise a straightforward design, typical of many in the Hastings CBD of the 1930s. The Carrow Road site of the Holden building is the next one. Now we saw the Holden building around the other side in Heratong Street, and this is from the other side in Carrow Road. And as we walk along, we see the sculpture, which is Mark's feature. And then if you look down the vista, you'll see all the lovely buildings. And you can walk down there till you get to the clock tower. Mm-hmm. Now, if there's any questions or anything, there are brochures at the back, our Heritage Trails brochures. So if there's anything of particular interest that you'd like to do, well then the brochures are at the back. You can get the complete brochure. So if anybody would like to share with us any stories of some of those buildings or businesses that they remember, it'd be great to hear some stories.
Egan, the first photo you showed on the clock tower, you could see the old gas tank in the distance at the back.
I'd just like to point out that we should be so proud of our city. In all those buildings that we've seen, have you noticed the facades are looking sharp, the colour schemes are appropriate, and a lot of that has to do with facade enhancement scheme that the council has run for a good number of years now. And Landmarks has over the years awarded recognition of outstanding projects, and I think your slides, Megan, have really picked up on that. There's very little that we should be ashamed of in our city. It's looking stunning, I think. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. It's like above the Nutters building, you've got that great big advertising.
Oh, sign. Yes. That didn't last for long. There was a very strong dissent. In fact, there was more than dissent. There was a rule, wasn't there, that we weren't going to have any of that loud, garish advertising material. And it even extended to colours. Remember the yellow pharmacy, or was it next to the pharmacy that sprung up? That had a dampener put on it pretty quickly, luckily.
Can anybody speak to that gas tower? Give us any history of that.
That's where the gas works were.
Of course, in those days, the Heratonga Street went across, and you can see the cars.
The cars.
And that gives away the era.
Well, I did that on purpose. I got some of the old pictures because, you know, they were much more interesting. We can just go down and see the ones today. But, of course, I have to be a bit careful with copyright and everything. So a lot of the photos I actually took myself because I don't have to worry about copyright for me.
Megan, if I can add a bit more to the gasworks, I went to Central School, and of course the gasworks was across the road from there. And that thing you can see there, the gas, whatever you call it,
tank.
It goes
up. It's a
up
tank. It's gas.
Another thing that most of you won't know is a lot of the heat from that gasworks there heated the swimming pool across the road. There at times, everything gets used some way or another.
That photo of number 106 Queen Street is where Watty's printers were. Is the original location of where the Terrace Motor Company started out.
Yeah, there's lots and lots of different sites. Like most of that Russell Street, John Trask tells us that that was a timber yard. And he's got photographs of it being a timber yard. It's really hard to know how much to put in and how far back to go, because every site's got different stories. And of course they're changing all the time. And of course, as you notice, nearly everyone had a significant something happened in 1931. It was when it was changed and was rebuilt. So that most of the town was rebuilt after the 31 earthquake.
I like the incident about the Dysart Motor Building on the corner, which is now a human body builder. Well, it was. I don't know if it is still.
I noticed the corner of the post office where it cuts off. The theory behind that, I think, was in Napier, that people came out of buildings and didn't know whether to run left or right. You can tell in Napier the buildings that were built after the earthquake have got the corners cut off.
That's interesting.
Talking about the gasworks, we biked past that going to school, high school. But you mentioned about the bodybuilder. Well, there was a neighbour of ours, her father worked at the gasworks for 32 years, shoveling coal. He didn't need to be at that sort of bodybuilder.
And just going back to Simmons, I would guess quite a number of people here would remember they had the agency. I'm not sure whether they were the only ones, but they certainly had the agency for the little units that were imported from America called Planet Juniors. Some of them were single wheel and some of them were double wheel, and they had seed boxes on. Some of you remember those. I don't know where they're American. They had a range of tools. They were made for the home gardener, but they were also used in small commercial.
So it had all the gear on it, did it?
No, you could buy the simple and then you could add on. A bit like a Meccano set.
Yeah, sort of long arms and a little box.
So
it would really have a seat box on there, I think, my understanding. And then the front would have a little bit of a plough which would dig a trench. And then the back wheel, I remember, was like this. So it pulled the earth back in the seat. A lot of the ones that I saw were just a single wheel, but it wasn't flat, it was an inverted triangle, so that the wheel actually pulled the dirt back and pressed it onto the seat.
But they're missing that it had to be pushed.
Can you remember the very tall wooden ladders they had in FL Bones?
Yeah, we've got stories. You know, I was hoping that some of you would have little bits and pieces like that that I could sort of add. This is like almost the final draft for this eastern end, and then the brochure's also going to have the western side of the CBD. And within a few months, hopefully, we can have that printed. And we're going to have plaques, paid for the plaques. We're having 10 plaques, 6 down the eastern end and 4 on the western end that'll be in the pavement. Similar to the plaques out in Havelock, there's plaques in our heritage trail out there for the walk. So we'll be doing the same here.
I just want to ask if anybody remembers Woolworths and Mackenzie
on the
side of the railway
line. That's on the west one. Yeah, watch this space. Have we forgotten anything?
Another shop that hasn't been mentioned was Bunkers.
A very long shop.
The toy shop.
And that was by the little red bookshop, wasn't it?
Next to the other.
I think the Bunkers was the little red bookshop.
Yes.
Oh, was it?
Right next door to the other hotel.
Bunkers was infamous because it was very, very long.
Yeah. It used to be a cafeteria, a tea room.
A tea room?
L.J. Harvey's son in Russell Street, I think it was, where John Frank Fussell worked for years. That's where everybody went to buy their china, you know, wedding presents, silver. I know a lot of ours. Home came from Harvey's. Albert Garnet, the well-known architect, he was the father of Mrs. Harvey.
That's right. I read all that, but I mean, I couldn't put everything in. But yeah, they were linked, weren't they? Family-wise, yes. And as he was asked to design the building, he then met the sister of the wife, something like that, in Maritua. Yeah.
Two shops in that area. The other one was Hannah's Cycle Shop, next door to Bunkers.
Ming and I discovered that the cemetery has only the names of those killed in the First World War.
Not the Second.
The Second World War.
It's so in the library. Yeah.
Well, I think this could go on for quite a while. But I think it's probably when this brochure is released, we ought to organise a walk.
That's a good idea. And perhaps that can be our launch. We usually like to
have mobility scooters.
Crutches, anything you like. Just come.
When we have a launch, you'll all be invited to our launch because it's one of the best kept secrets because the Heritage Trails Committee are all volunteers. You know, nobody really knows about them unless we have occasions like this. People don't know about them. They're handy to have in your car, if you're, you know, travelling anywhere. They're handy to give to visitors when they come to visit. But when we launch a new trail or revamp an old trail, we usually like to make a big rah-rah at the launch of it because that is the only opportunity that we have to sort of really make something public, get some media coverage. Because we run on the smell of an oil rag.
And what Megan hasn't said is that the Hastings Heritage Trails Group is looked on by the rest of New Zealand as the model. And it's the biggest and the most successful over all these years.
So I had a call just today from a lady in Wadestown who said that there's a Heritage Trail sign there and she must have Googled it. And she rang me, she said, I need some help. We need to redo the sign, we don't know how to do it. And because what happened, it was set up by a person in New Plymouth, a woman, Elaine Gill, and there was a committee in Gisborne and they set up Heritage Trails. And they set sort of really quite strict rules with the green and the yellow and the logo and that sort of thing. And when I was on the Regional Council in 1989, she came and talked to us. There was Diana Williams and myself, and we sort of lobbied for it to have a committee set up. We had one in Wairoa, one in Napier, one in Hastings, and one in Central Hawke's Bay. But we were fortunate in Hastings that we had a little bit of money in engineering that would look after the signs for us. And so we used to just watch that and keep it, and we had councillors on our committee. So we kept quite close contact with the council, whereas all around the country where they set up trails, they didn't have that sort of continuity. We also became an incorporated society, the Hastings District one. And then Wairoa went defunct, Central Hawke's Bay went defunct, Napier went defunct. But we've helped them. The Napier one actually physically joined us when Robert McGregor formally handed over the Napier Trails. Any finance they had gave it to us for us to take over the Napier Trails. And you'll notice that we've got the Napier Trails and the brochures and things. So we've just been a bit lucky that we've had that continuity. We've had the passion, I guess, but we do hear from people around the country because all the signs are still there and people don't really realise. Some brochures are there, but they're all out of date. And you know, I mean, my dream is to have from the top of the North Island to the bottom of the South Island all linked up with Heritage Trails.
Thanks for all the hard work and your time.
Thank you so much.